Christ's teaching was powerful because he used things that everybody understood in their life. It was like, I could relate to him because he's talking about a farmer. In case you're wondering why there's Lay's potato chips up here, that's for later in the sermon. It's a sermon illustration because even potato chips have a spiritual value attached to them, as we're going to see. I'm just following Jesus. So we'll come back to that later in case thinking minds want to know. But Jesus, when he wanted to talk about the power of the gospel, he likened it in his first parable to a sower and soils. And he would take and throw seed out into the world of the gospel, and it would land on different kinds of soil. And three of those soils would not produce productive seed, but the fourth seed would produce prolific seed. That was the gospel. And he says, if you read that, a whole parabolic section of chapter 13, that as the world progresses into his second coming, that the gospel seed will be intermixed with weeds. And at the end of the age, he will come back and he will separate the wheat, the believer, from the unbeliever, the wheat, the weed. And when I've been in Israel, there's many times I've been up in the Golan Heights, in the mountains above the Sea of Galilee, walking with the tour group to look at different vantage points of the Sea of Galilee down below you. And it is amazing to be walking down a dirt road and listening to the wind blow through the mountainside of the wheat in the wind blowing. It's just a moment with you in Christ, because you can just see him walking here with the disciples and teaching them about wheat. You are the wheat. And then all of a sudden, because I'm a former gardener, I know what weeds are. You see thistle, and you're like, wow, that's exactly what Christ was talking about. So Christ spoke in a way that everybody got it, right? And it wasn't abstract. Paul learned from Jesus, and he taught the same way. Because in the passage that we've been looking at from chapter 3, verse 5 through 4, verse 6, Paul has been saying, if you know Christ as the God-man, that should radically change how you live. You should take off old clothing and old godless clothing and put on spiritual clothing. And he's using that metaphor because we all wear clothes, right? You're thinking about it? There was some guy in New York I watched on the news yesterday who didn't have that motif in his head, but we do wear clothing. And so you get the image. It's like, oh yeah, I've got a bunch of old t-shirts I should get rid of. But that is an illustration of your spiritual life. There's things you need to get rid of and things you need to put on. So we've developed the theme for weeks now. You should have this drilled in your head. The main idea of the passage is your Christian life, once you become a believer, should always be moving from the old life, the old sinful you, to the new life, the new you, new clothing. Old clothing, new clothing. So what he does in this chapter, he vacillates back and forth between the old clothing and the new clothing. He helps you identify it. So he moves down the ladder of abstraction from just talking about how to get sanctified to actually showing you how to go about doing it. So we want to pick up where we left off in our last study. Paul's going to add two more garments. Now he's first talked about negative garments, sinful things that you need to get rid of. And then he spent many, many verses talking about positive garments. He's talked so far about 18 garments. Positive garments that you should be wearing as a Christian. So you should be asking yourself, am I doing this? It's not enough just to go, oh, yeah, I know what that is. No, are you implementing it into your life, actually wearing it? He's going to add two more to this today. So he's going to have 20 total. So I know when you open your closet and you're looking at your options for a day, you have choices, right? You're a man. You have a couple, just a couple? Yeah. But you're a pilot, are you not? So don't you have like the pilot's uniform and all that stuff and everything? But you have other clothes. So it's, you know, is it a shirt day, or you know, your wife helps you too? Does she? That's why you got married. I understand the drill. But you have all these choices. You know, should I wear, you know, this golf shirt, these kind of pants? And oh, what's the weather like today? You have these choices. So your spiritual walk should be the same way. It's like, oh man, Paul talked about these 20 garments I should wear. Man, I got to work on this. I got to put them on. He's going to add two to think about to round it out to 20. Today he's going to talk about garment number 19. He tells you what it is. Do you see what it is? Wise walking, which tells you, well, if he's telling you you should walk wisely, then, well, the antithesis is probably there too. Is it possible for a Christian to walk unwisely? Answer? Yeah. So what does he say here? Verse 5. Let's read it. Conduct yourselves with wisdom. Toward who? Wonder who that is. Toward outsiders. And then he throws in a participle. Don't you love participles? Serious? He talks about making the most of the opportunity. Why do you have to throw that in? And what does that mean? So let's analyze this. He tells you, next article of clothing is walking wisely. So the command to walk wisely is, I'll show it to you. So this is the command, peripateite. It comes from peripateo. Peri means to go around. Pateo means to walk. So it means to walk around. So he's just walking around or moving through life. So he says, as you walk through life, make sure you do it with wisdom, Sophia. So if your name is, anybody named Sophia? In the entire church, there's no one. Okay. The name Sophia means wisdom. And so he says this is the preposition in. So in the sphere of wisdom, walk. It's not a suggestion. How are you walking? Now, I don't know how you live your life. I live my life to minimize foolish decisions. You know, you want to be able to look back at your life and go, oh, yeah, you know, I tried to make wise decisions. You don't want to look back to your life and go, serious? What was I thinking? Foolish decisions. Let's think about if you were from Florida, all right? If you're from Florida and you're in a canoe, how easy is it to flip a canoe? It's very easy to flip a canoe. In fact, when you're in a canoe, you don't want to make, like, radical movements. Now, if you're in Floridian waters that have alligators in them, and you're in a canoe, you should not do what I saw a young lady do this week. She's in a canoe. She's in the front of the canoe. She's got a buddy behind her. She sees an alligator floating by her. It's as long as the canoe. And so she reaches out and... What are you gasping for? Wise move, unwise move? Unwise move. She reaches out, and she's got her phone, so she's leaning over to take a picture and do a selfie. And then she's like, isn't this awesome? I can send this to all my friends. I'm like, are you serious? Somebody needs to call that young lady and go, look, that was really lame. Suppose you flip the canoe. The alligator lives in that water. You would be lunch. So you see people do unwise things all the time. I do. And you're like, serious? Somebody needs to talk to that person. Wisdom says, if you're in Florida in a canoe, stay in the boat. Our friends, they live down in Jupiter. They used to live here. They moved to Jupiter, built a house on a lake, private home, private gated area. Their house is on a point, and it's on a lake. And I'm going there in, I don't know, about 2 weeks to go see them do a sabbatical down there. It's very interesting when you're floating around the pool catching some rays, because you can look through their little black chain, not chain link fence, but the steel fence that goes around the perimeter of their property, that divides it from the lake. You can be sitting there in a nice chair floating around, you know, having a soda, and watch alligators swimming by. You see their heads, their little eyeballs. You can see them going by. They're like logs. And you're like, can they climb? I asked that question. What's the answer? Yes. Yeah, they can climb. How fast are they? Yes. Faster than you. I don't swim a lot. If you're there, it's like the first thing I do when I go there is I eyeball the pool and check it out. I'm not just jumping in blindly. And at nighttime, I'm definitely checking out the pool. Turn the lights on. I got to see what's in that pool. Because wise people know better, right? So, is it possible for a Christian to live unwisely? The answer is yes. They can do lame things that can be destructive. So Paul says, you got a choice now that you're walking with Jesus. You can walk wisely or you can walk unwisely. He says, I want you to walk wisely. So think about this. He says, I want you to walk wisely toward a special group. He calls them the outsiders, to those who are outside. Who's that? A non-believer, a non-Christian. So he says, make sure you walk wisely, especially toward non-Christians. Now, how do I know that it's non-Christians? Because the word for outsider here in Greek is used in the New Testament, like in Mark 4:11, 1 Corinthians 5:12, and following, 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 12. Whenever you find that particular Greek construction for outsider, just proof text it. It refers to a non-Christian. So he says, if you are living in your world in a sanctified status, you'll do it in such a way that your wise living is seen by those who are outside of Jesus. So there's only two kinds of people in our church. Those who are inside Christ, those who are outside of Christ. Those who are saved, those who are unsaved. Those who are convinced he was the Messiah, the Savior, those who are not convinced. There's only two people. Which group are you in? And how do you get to go from the outside to the inside? Do you know? Do you know? Okay, do I do all kinds of ritualistic things and say certain kinds of prayers and do all kinds of great works to get in? No. Because I'm saved by grace, right? It's not a work. I mean, I can do holy things to point myself to God to show that I'm doing holy things. But those holy things don't make me holy. Only Jesus saves me. And he's done the work on the cross. And so there's outsiders, there's insiders. I'm an insider. Hopefully you're an insider. If you're an outsider, the way that you inside is through Jesus, who's the Savior, who saves you, cleanses you, and puts you on the inside. So everybody that got baptized today, there was a bunch in the last service, they're telling you, I was once outside, now I'm inside. And Paul says, make sure you walk wisely toward those who are outside. Why? They're watching you. What are they watching you for? Well, to see if you really live like you're on the inside. Because you will either give them information why to stay on the outside, or you will give them information as to why they need to move from the outside to the inside. When I was moving, like, I think 14 cords of wood in seminary to make some extra money out of a big trailer, a bunch of guys, they got together from the community. They weren't Christians and me. And, I got the job board, got the job. Guy standing next to me, big burly dude, big beard, rough guy, cussed the whole time we're moving those 14 cords of wood, handing it out of this big trailer. He cussed the entire day. The Lord's name in vain, constantly. And then he looked at me at one point because he found out I was a preacher, studying to be a preacher, and he apologized to me. And I told him, hey, you didn't offend me. You offended God Almighty. You need to have a conversation with him. He's like, whoa, that's heavy duty, right? Yeah, you know, walking wisely. I mean, that's not walking wisely. So he's watching me, I'm watching him, etc. So let's drill down. What does unwise walking look like as for a Christian, all right? Because Paul didn't get down to this granular level, but we need to, because we need to walk out the door to go, I need to stop doing that. What's unwise walking look like? This is Bible trivia 101, all right? Who is Euodia and Syntyche? Who are they? Euodia and Syntyche. If you say they're two women, that's an easy one. Yeah. Yes, they are. Philippians 4, they are known as two women at church who fought. Thank you so much on the front row. It's totally holy over here. Yeah, thank you. Philippians 4, Paul tells them, could you please get your act together and stop fighting? Now, which clothing did they have on? Well, the clothes of argumentation. So I don't know what they were fighting over at church, probably something lame and irrelevant. And Paul says, will you stop doing that? Why? Because, well, it disrupts the unity of the church. Plus, non-Christians are looking at you going, why would I don't want to go from the outside to the inside? They do that at my office. I don't want to do that. Are you guilty of having an argument with someone else? And is that detracting from a non-Christian who's watching you? Are you guilty of what is called value dilution? What's that? That is, you soften and downplay biblical beliefs to avoid arguments and to make yourself fit in with non-Christians. I don't do that. Jesus didn't. But do you do that? You befriend all the wrong people and begin to start doing like what they do. Solomon talks about this in Proverbs 1. It's the whole chapter. In fact, the book of Proverbs for wise living starts out with peer pressure. Like, who are your friends? Because if you pick bad friends, guess what? You're going to be tempted to do bad things. And I know, because I used to have bad friends. And when you're with bad friends, they do things that, like, serious, that you just, I can't know you anymore. And so do you have all the wrong friends in your life who are getting you to do things you shouldn't do? How about your car gets repossessed? Why is that so bad? Well, now you don't have a car. But what's it tell a non-Christian who's looking at your life? Hey, I thought you Christians had your act together. I mean, you mismanage your life to where you can't even make a car payment? And what's going on in your life? I mean, serious? You gamble on games as much as they do. You drink as much as they do. You use foul language as much as they do. Have you ever noticed that when you start cussing, that it's easy to cuss more? Confess now. Yeah, isn't it easier? And some words just become your go-to words. And all of a sudden you're like, man, I got a problem, but I just can't stop. I used to be that way when I was younger. And then I had to give that to the Lord to help me not talk like that anymore. And he gave me victory. It took several years. But if you constantly use language like that outside of church, not at church, of course, because you want to look holy when you're here, right? But man, if I could see you like on Saturday or Friday or something, you're like, serious? Or be with you when you're driving or something. You're like, oh my gosh, unbelievable. But do you do that? How about your children? Well, we don't want to discipline them for anything. We just want to let them kind of live and let live. Really? And so people invite you over for dinner, and your children terrorize that house. They break stuff, destroy stuff, pull stuff out of dressers. They're in bedrooms. They're all over the place. And you're just like oblivious. If that's a non-Christian family and their kids are ordered and squared away, what are they thinking? Wow. I thought Christian families were squared away. And they're not. Non-Christian friends, they loan you stuff all the time. But then when you're asked to loan stuff, it's like, oh no, God has told me I can't do that. I can't loan. You're stingy. They're not stingy. When non-Christians are experiencing personal adversity, you don't come alongside of them. Well, it feels awkward if I do. That kind of stuff. How about you're having a girls' night out with your non-Christian friends, and they're talking their husband down, so you talk your husband down. Or you're out playing golf with a bunch of non-Christian friends, they're talking their wives down, so you talk your wife down. That's not wise living, right? So what did Paul say? Walk wisely to who? To outsiders. And then he threw in that participial phrase. What did he say? Make the most of the opportunity. Make the most of the opportunity. The word that he uses here for opportunity is the word kairos. And I'll show it to you. See this right here in yellow? Tone kairon. This is called an accusative. It's showing you the direct object of the sentence. But kairon comes from the Greek word kairos. And you're like, what are we talking about? This is significant because kairon or kairos is the Greek god of opportunity. And so hence it's translated, make the most of the opportunity. Because he's speaking to a Greek audience, so he's using their terminology. He says, you guys all know about the Greek god of opportunity. His name's Kairos. He's the one that's pictured in all of the marble statues where he doesn't have clothes, and he has wings on his feet, and he has scales in his hand, and he has a lock of hair on the top of his head. And as he's coming at you, you got one chance to grab opportunity, because if he gets by you, there's nothing to grab onto. Okay, that's kairos. Paul says, hey, let me tap into something you all understand. Make the most of the kairos. That when an opportunity comes your way to be a witness to a non-believer, a person on the outside, don't miss it. How many times have you missed an opportunity? And he says, in some translations, seize the opportunity. So this word here, this is the verb for seizing the opportunity. And see these first two letters here? That's X. And this word here, agora, sound familiar? Like an agora, like a shopping center, like Fair Oaks Mall is like an agora. So when you hear they're going to have a sale, like a big one, not 10%, that's not even worth showing up. But they're going to have like a big sale, 40%, 70%, like that. That's the word. Get to shopping big time. Seize the opportunity. Now, guys are laughing like, I would never show up dead at Fair Oaks Mall. I would if something good was on sale. Now, we just had an amazing event here, culturally speaking, June the 23rd to the 26th. Do you know what happened then? Prime day. You guys live in this culture? Okay, let's go. What happened during that time? We had Prime Day. What is Prime Day? Do you buy on Prime Day? Amazon Prime Day. Yeah, Prime Day, once a year, there it is. Deals off the hook. I mean, you're scrolling through them going, man, we got to have that. I don't want to use it for it, but it's on sale. I got to buy it. I mean, all this stuff, you know, stocking up on things that are on sale. You're seizing the opportunity because, trust me, this happened to me. I found something I really liked. I didn't pull the trigger. I didn't get it. After the 26th, go back the 27th, it's back to full price. Serious? I got to wait another year. Okay, I've got that off my chest. Apply this spiritually. Think about your non-Christian friends. He has a government contract. He loses his job. He lets you know that he lost his job. He's very worried about it because he has a house payment, car payment, kids are in college, etc. And he comes over and he spills his guts to you that he lost his government contract. And what are you supposed to do? Hey, Harry, so bad to hear that. I'm busy, dude. No. You spend time talking to him. And if your name Harry and you lost your government contract, and you're probably freaking out right now, but I just pulled the name out of thin air. But you understand, as a Christian, you want to step into Harry's world and be there for him. Seize that moment, because you might not get that opportunity again. Say their marriage is on the rocks. Say Harry's marriage is on the rocks. And what should you do as a Christian? Well, you should point Harry to the rock, Jesus, by sitting there talking to him, listening to him, loving on him, giving him wisdom, giving him counsel. I once read, because when I moved here, you know, from California, I wasn't used to weather at all. I had to buy a whole bunch of new gear to move here. I mean, I have more gloves and coats and things, different boots for different days and pants that are lined with fleece and ones that aren't. I mean, it's unbelievable. So much cheaper to live in California, but you come here and you gotta buy all this gear, and then your shoes are jacked up all the time. I've never cleaned shoes so much till I moved here. It's either rainy, it's muddy, it's snowy, it's slushy, etc. So I read this story one day. I'm like, oh, that is unbelievable. An old man, a Christian man, heard about a family that had a death in their family, and it was a snowy, messy day. Because you know how it is when it snows, it's beautiful. Just give it a couple days, and then it gets messy. And so they were having, you know, had a snowstorm, and the snow had got slushy, ugly. And so this old man showed up at their door one day, the family that was going to a funeral, knocked on the door. They don't even really know the guy all that well. And they opened the door to him, and they're like, why are you here? And he's like, I'm here. He has a little shoebox with him, a wooden shoebox for like cleaning shoes. And he said, I am here today to clean all of your shoes so that when you go to the funeral, you're looking good. And so he brought all the kids' shoes, all the parents' shoes down, and that old man sat in their kitchen and cleaned all their shoes and handed the shoes back to him, and then he left. That was Christ, right? He was seizing the moment. It's that kind of stuff. So when you look at your life, the clothing that you should put on, garment number 19, is wise walking. Will you do it? Are you doing it? It's how people get saved. I find it interesting. Paul's not saying, give them your best argumentations from teleology or from cosmology about the origin of the cosmos from the hand of God Almighty. Give them that stuff. Is he saying that? No, you can do that. He's let them see your wise walking. That winsome walking will win them to Christ. Last garment is a convicting garment. Last garment, seasoned speech. Let your speech always be with what? Grace. Well, seasoned, as it were, with salt, so that you may know how you should respond to each person. So when you talk, may your speech be such that when a non-Christian hears you, they got to have some more of that. Because think about it. Who doesn't, when you got a nice piece of steak on your plate, you want a little salt on that, don't you? Little porterhouse, little salt. Kevin will pray for you, buddy. Yeah. Little salt just brings out the flavor. Now, too much salt wrecks it, but, you know, nice piece of salmon. You got a little salt on there, a couple capers. I like capers. Salty flavor, awesome on the capers. But that salt makes you just want to have some more. And Paul says, when you think about your speech as a Christian, it should be the nature that when a non-Christian hears you, they're like, wow, there's something totally different about talking to that person that I need to have more of that. One of our parishioners years ago is into smoking, not smoking, but smoking food, okay? And so because they're really into smoking food, they built a new patio and built a whole new structure at their house for cooking meat, and it's got a wheel to lower pigs down into the fire and all kinds of stuff. And so he had a smoker, a Komodo smoker, a big one, and a stainless steel cabinet that he had built for it. And he didn't need that anymore because they had this massive system. So he called me up and said, hey, do you want a smoker? I'm like, I'm a Weber grill guy. I got a charcoal grill, and I got a Weber grill. Depends on what I'm cooking. That is what I do. And he's like, oh, I'll give you this smoker. And it's really awesome. I'm like, I don't know how to do smoked meat. I'll give you lessons. He said, I'll give you the smoker, and I'll give you lessons. And he said, it's got a computer that goes with it and everything. I was like, huh? A smoker with a computer? I'm like, yeah. How easy could this be? And so he gave it to me. Took 4 men to move it. 4 men. I had to build a platform to set this thing on. It's massive. Set it down. And then he starts giving me lessons to smoke. Now, I learned a whole lot about the smoking world, of which I'm totally oblivious to. And did you know that smoking meat is a spiritual experience? Because it introduced me to rubs. Rubs? You know what I'm talking about? Do you guys smoke? Yeah, rubs. Because you quickly learn, as I learned as a newbie, that, well, there's certain kind of rubs with certain kind of meat. So there's certain kind of rub for chicken. There's certain kind of rub for ribs, pork butt, whatever it is you're cooking. Now all of a sudden I have like a cabinet full of rubs. that it's like you're at a doctor doing surgery when you're getting something ready to smoke it. It's like, hey, baby, hand me that bottle, you know? And, oh, I got to cut the fat off this, you know, so it doesn't mess up the pork butt and all the stuff that you do. So I've learned that these rubs really make the difference between a really good, like in this case, what is up here? Ribs. The right kind of rub can just take that to a whole nother level, that you just eat one rib, you got to have three, four. Except, see the spiritual value of this? Yeah, you a little bit more. Then I learned, oh, you don't just need the rub. You got to have the right smoke. Huh? Oh, there's different kinds of smoke. So my friend bought me different boxes of wood. I think it's from Georgia. Special wood. I got a box of cherry, got a box of, you know, oak, whatever. I got all these boxes piled up in my garage. And when I'm cooking, I know, it's like, this is what I'm cooking, so I want this kind of taste. And if I need this kind of taste, I go online, I go, with this kind of meat, what kind of wood makes it have this kind of taste? It tells me, and I then put that wood in there. So it's like a science. And then I've learned from other guys here at church who've discipled me that, hey, do you use vinegar? For what? Vinegar, water, mix it up. Occasionally go out, spray the meat, makes it juicy, fall off the bone. It's spiritual, see what I mean? Because all of a sudden, you eat this thing at the right temperature, and it just falls off the bone on your plate. And it's like, man, this is life-changing. Now, I couldn't help but look at this and go, this is exactly what Paul's talking about, spiritually speaking, isn't it? That you have a little bit of this, the rub and the right smoke and everything, and you got to have another piece of this and another piece of this. It's awesome. This is how your speech should be to a non-Christian. That when they're talking with you, that the grace from Christ is so great with you, the love, the compassion, the concern that you have as you speak to them, that they do walk away going, man, I got to have me some more of that. Is that how you talk? Now, back in 1963, when I was a little kid, I was at church one day, and I can remember when it happened. I was in a staircase going to Sunday school class, and I don't know why, but the guys I was hanging with, we were talking about lunch because it was getting close to lunch, and they were talking about this new potato chip, Lay's potato chip, 1963. Were you alive back then?
Nope.
No. Okay, just go with it, okay? 1963. Lay's potato chips. You see what I'm talking about? Now, so they were talking about Lay's potato chips, and so I asked them as my friends, like, hey, what's so great about that chip? Because they were talking about how good it was. And they're like, oh, man, you eat one, you eat the bag. I'm like, okay. So then I saw this ad. Remember this ad? Yeah. You're old. Yeah. What was the ad? It's a challenge to all type A people. Bet you can't eat just one. And I saw that on television. I thought, I'll take them up on that. My friend said they were good. So I bought a bag. I took it home, and I ripped open. And I pulled out one of these, and I'm like, man, these things are light. They're airy. This is amazing. Sorry, I can't share with you. I haven't got to that sermon on stinginess and sharing. I'm like, one chip becomes two chips. Oh, man, that's so sweet. Got to have another one. And then all of a sudden, you're eating your Lay's potato chips, and you're going, this is spiritual. How is it spiritual? If you leave me up here long enough, that bag's gone, right? You ever done that? I'm like, I'm not telling anybody. That's what Paul's talking about. Apply that to your spiritual life and how you talk. That you should be like a Lay's potato chip. That when they partake of your conversation, haven't you ever run into that person? I've done it with Liz. I run into people and I'm like, I think they're a Christian. You can tell by how they talk and their facial expressions. There's a sweetness about them. There's a love about them. And then you go talk to them and they're a believer. I've done this many times. Go talk like that. That wins people to Christ. It moves them from the outside to the inside because they want more of that. And that's Jesus. Let's stand and worship. Have a great week. Go buy some Lay's potato chips.